is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Got a big show coming up today. We'll talk to our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. She'll join us at the bottom of the hour. So some news surrounding the Mariners getting back to business. John Clayton will join us at 4. But a little bit of breaking news with the Seattle Seahawks moments ago, about 7 minutes ago. Adam Schefter sent out the tweet, former Texans running back Carlos Hyde has reached an agreement with the Seattle Seahawks, per source. So there you go. No terms released yet that I've seen. I don't know if anybody else has seen it to this point, but Carlos Hyde, the veteran running back the Seahawks have elected to acquire, and we've had this discussion. We talked about it yesterday, kind of comparing Hyde versus Freeman versus Lynch. Who would you want? Freeman, obviously, the better running back is in terms of receiving out of the backfield, much more of a threat receiving the ball, but really injury issues and wanting a lot more money. Just the idea of paying up to $4 million if he reached incentives for a backup running back never appealed to me. So I'm happy with this. Carlos Hyde is the guy I wanted. Hopefully, he fits in as well as anybody could. I assume Chris Carson will carry the bulk of the weight here. And Carlos Hyde, I think, is a great insurance policy.
Yeah, and I think you guys are right about that. I mean, it's once you saw the money that Freeman wanted, they just don't have it. And like you said, Bob, for a backup, you don't want that. And if Hyde, and we'll see what the details are. It's not official yet, but he ran for 1,070 yards last year, which was his best year. And, you know, I'm trying to remember if he was on the roster with Houston, because I do remember last year in the preseason being down in L.A. for the Charger preseason game and Lamar Miller tearing his ACL in a preseason game. So, and they were thinking they were pretty much doomed. And so I don't remember if Carlos Hyde was on the roster, but he sure filled in well. And like I said, 1,070 yards, 4.4 yard average. He catches the ball a little bit, but it's not really how he's used. So, yeah, that's a good insurance policy. I thought it was going to be a D tackle first before it was a running back, but think about how important, and I know we're going to talk about the offense a little bit today and how they need to be, you know, kind of carry this team maybe a little bit until the defense can find out who is going to step up on that side of the ball. But running backs are a huge part. And I can't remember who the guy was we had on, but somebody this week was talking about the statistics of like turnover ratio. And I did a thing on this on Football 101 going into the playoffs. I think it was 7 of the top 10 running teams in the NFL were in the playoffs. So it's very important, and it's very important to this offense. So it makes sense that they signed Hyde as not even really as an insurance policy, but maybe a guy that can actually really help you.
Well, yeah, I was just looking at Carlos Hyde last year, and he was with the Chiefs, Dave, and they sent him to Houston in a trade at the end of preseason. So maybe that's what was happening there. But you look at the deal that Clayton was telling us yesterday, that it was probably going to be around the veteran minimum, around $1 million. That was what he was projecting anyway. Hyde made $2.8 million last year. He's turning 30 in September, so I don't know if it's going to be veteran minimum, but somewhere between $1 and $2.8 million, you figure, and a better deal that you could have gotten with him than you could with Freeman, and Freeman with the injury history. So I'm with you, Bob. I mean, I look at Carlos Hyde, a 1-2 punch with Chris Carson. It also tells you that they think Rashad Penny isn't going to start the season, because if they felt, we've known that all along, but that pretty much confirms it, that Penny, we won't be seeing him. He'll probably be on the PUP list, and he won't be in action until October sometime. So you got Carlos Hyde now to back up. You needed a veteran guy. You got DJ Dallas in the draft. We saw glimpses of Travis Homer last year, but I don't think they feel comfortable in having him be the 1B back to Chris Carson, your 1A. So, yeah, good move by the Seahawks. You know, one thing I will point out, though, Bob, is that you're right. Last year, you look at Carlos Hyde, his numbers as a receiver. He only had 10 catches out of the backfield for Houston. But when he was with San Francisco, he had 1 year where he had 59 catches out of the backfield for the 49ers. So I think he's got some ability there, too.
Yeah, it's the only other year he's played 16 games for whatever reason. And I know he was behind other guys in Cleveland and Jacksonville where he played six games and eight games, respectively. He's only had two seasons of 16 games, but in those seasons, you know, he's been wildly productive. In terms of receiving, you pointed out he had 87 targets that year, so obviously not afraid to throw him the ball. This year, his best year in terms of yardage totals, and he's a guy who's been productive. I mean, you know, he ran for 940 yards that year that he also had 59 receptions, so he's capable as a receiver out of the backfield. And again, we're talking about a backup, you know, and that was always my hesitation with Freeman. I like Freeman as a running back. I think he's got a ton of talent, but the idea of paying him somewhere near $4 million if he reached incentives just didn't make sense for a backup. Hopefully Carson is going to be healthy and play 16 games. And this move tells you two other things. A, Marshawn Lynch isn't coming back. He's not going to come back to Seattle. That dream is over. B, CJ Procise. I don't know how many people were holding out hope, but he was always dangled as an option and they like him and all of that. And, you know, they invested all this time, so maybe they bring him back. That's over. So we'll see how they figure it out with DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, and then when Rashad Penny is healthy, how this is all going to work out. But that's been made clear that those two options are no longer options.
Yeah, well, now you're looking at the running backs, and that's who going to profile today: Anthony Jones and also Patrick Carr, one out of Houston, the other out of FIU. And just as a little tease, one of them may or may not have gotten shot in the face during a season and made it back to play football. So anyway, there's a little tease for you. But yeah, it's there's a good amount of them, and that's what they need, man. They need, you know, it's going to be by committee, and I know Moyer talked about that yesterday. Obviously, you want Chris Carson to be the bell cow there, but you know, if something happens with him, which it has. You know, he's gotten, you know, we say this, I say it a lot anyway, you don't tend to get healthier if you start having injuries. And it's just a tough position, man. You know, again, the times I had my hand on the ball, I realized that everybody's trying to kill you. And all 11 guys, you know, playing linebacker, there's one guy responsible, probably maybe two, for blocking you. But when you're a running back, everybody's trying to get you and hit you. And it's just a tough position to play. So you got to have tough guys there. And it's, you know, it's kind of a shame for, and I've said this before, that, you know, that guys like this have to take like a league minimum. I mean, Carlos Hyde's only in his seventh year. And we'll see what the details are on it. Maybe they're going to give him a chance to earn some money. But guy rushed for over 1,000 yards, and he's signing the veteran minimum. So at least that's what we've heard. So we'll see what happens there. But it's just a tough position. I would not want to be a running back. If you're raising out there, you're raising your kids to be NFL players, which I'm sure everybody is. Don't have them play running back, okay? Have them play quarterback or offensive line or possibly linebacker, but not running back, because they don't get paid.
Yeah, and looking at the idea that they offered Freeman, and that was the story, that they had made an offer to Devontae Freeman. The idea was that it was somewhere around $3 million, could be $4 million with incentives. What would that have said about Travis Homer? Because you've got Carson. Let's pretend they signed Freeman at that kind of money. That's a commitment, so he's not going anywhere. You drafted DJ Dallas, and you're waiting for Rashad Penny to come back. And once Penny comes back, a first-round pick, would that be the end of Travis Homer?
Yeah, I mean, possibly, because, you know, I'll say this. I really liked him last year. He is a great rookie running back that he goes north-south, but he needs to get some shake, and he needs to make some, you know, moves downfield. And that's the one thing I think DJ Dallas has. And I think DJ had the same average per carry that he did. I think it was 4.6 at Miami. But he's got a lot more shake than Travis Homer. So Travis is going to have to really step up and develop his game in what's going to be a really competitive running back room.
Yeah, well, once Hyde gets here, I mean, really, Bob and Dave, when you look at it, his injury history is not near what Freeman's was, and you're going to pay more for Freeman based on the career that he's had. And yet, last year, Freeman, not the same guy for the Falcons that we've seen in the past when he was running for over 1,000 yards. He had a couple seasons with 11 touchdowns. But last year his career or his yards per carry were 3.6 yards, and then last year Carlos Hyde 4.4, which was the same as Chris Carson. So I think you're really getting good bang for your buck with Carlos Hyde coming in here, and you needed a veteran presence, I think, in that running back room. DJ Dallas, yeah, you think you like a lot, you like him a lot because you picked him in the fourth round. Travis Homer, I'm not sure what this says about Travis Homer. I don't think they have too much faith in him being a second string back, as it were. So we'll see how it works out with Carlos Hyde. But I'm with you, Bob. I like this move they made.
Yeah, and we'll get a closer look at him. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle will join us at 4:30 to talk about Carlos Hyde, and so we'll get a closer look at who he was, what he does well, what he doesn't do well, all that good stuff. But again, I think it's a great move for the Seahawks. You guys can text in, you can weigh in on it. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Also, it is Friday, which means mean texts coming up at the end of the show. So if you've got some venom you'd like to spit our way, go ahead. 710-710. Just be creative. That's all. Be creative with it. And we'll do that coming up at the end of the show.
You took out the cleanliness part, Bob.
I did, because you were right. You said last week, hey, we can edit it on the fly, and you're right, we can. So if they want to throw in their curse words, obviously we're not going to read them on the air. We're going to make edits to your tweet, your text, but if you feel the need, go ahead, throw in the expletives. We're not soft that way. So go ahead and text those in. Just be creative, though. Again, that's my big thing. That won't change. If you just text in and say, you guys stink, or Bob, you're a jerk, or Jim, you're dumb, whatever they're saying, that's not going to make it. You got to bring something to the table. So
one time somebody texted in, Dave, blank you, and that's not very creative, but I thought it was pretty funny. So
in context, it was very creative. In context of what we were talking about, you were getting a lot of compliments, and I jokingly said somebody's got to bring him back down to earth. He's going to have a big head, and somebody sent in a text, bleep you, Dave. So in that context, it really fit. Now, yesterday we were talking about this offense anyway, so they get a little muscle added to this offense. Again, in case you're just tuning in, the Seahawks agree to a deal with Carlos Hyde. We have not seen the details of it, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, what kind of money we're talking about. So that'll come out eventually. But Carlos Hyde has been added to this offense. We had Paul Moyer on yesterday, and he said, I think what we were saying going into last season, I remember talking about this, that it felt like, and especially as the season got started, cut number one, the offense is going to have to carry this team, and he expects the Seahawks to be a top five offense this year.
I think we're a better football team. I just, you know, I need Dunbar to come back and play. Although we can have another discussion about that. But I really think offensively, on the offensive line and what we have in tight ends, I think our offense has a chance to be really dynamic. Did our defense make a huge jump? No. But I'm hoping the young guys, we can improve a little bit. I still think this offense is going to have to be the team that, or the side of the ball that really drives this team, and we're going to expect them to be a top five offense, I think, this year.
Now, last year they were a top 10 offense, and I think we were all on board saying, hey, this team is going to go as far as this offense is going to take them. It was pretty clear the defense wasn't happening for them. Do they need to be top five? I mean, I know we're splitting hairs. They were top 10 last year. I think the Morris got it here. The Cowboys, Ravens, Bucks, 49ers, Falcons, Chiefs, and Rams were all ahead of them. So when you look at it now, do you say, okay, yeah, last year they were good. They've got to be that much better, because I think we all expect the defense to be better just by virtue of last year being a bit of an aberration. Not saying they weren't bad, but the idea of 28 sacks, I think they're going to have more than that. I feel like the defense will be better. Is it going to be substantially better? We'll see. But does the offense need to increase that much? Do they need to improve that much more to account for what they don't have defensively?
Yeah, well, I would think that those two kind of work together. So don't you expect the defense just to get better? I mean, like Bob, you and I have been saying, I think that you just think no matter what, they're going to get more sacks. They just have to. I mean, that was such a low total. I think there was one time in Seahawks history that they had 27 or 26. But, yeah, it was just kind of an aberration there. But, I mean, if they're a top five running team like they were last year, I mean, shoot, they were only 100 yards behind the 49ers for the entire year, 105 yards. So And the Niners, the 49ers actually ran it more than the Seahawks did last year. And then the Ravens were way off the charts just because of Lamar Jackson had, you know, over 1,000 yards. But yeah, I feel like, well, I don't think they need to be a top five team to, they won 12 games with a top eight defense or a top eight offense, and then a defense that was number three in taking the ball away. So, and that was their saving grace last year on defense. That's one thing that you could say they did well. They took the ball away. So, and the Seahawks have always been a good, done a good job of hanging on to it. So I just, yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to, you know, get better, but I expect it to, because, you know, that first year with Schottenheimer, they were 18th, and then last year they were 8th. So I expect, yeah, if they went into the top five, it would not surprise me, because you have a top three running quarterback in Russell Wilson. I thought he was the number three guy last year. I was arguing with somebody on text about that, but I'm like, well, one of them, you know, that I put ahead of him won the Super Bowl, and the other one was the MVP. So, and you can't argue with Lamar Jackson's season. And then Mahomes, he had a really good year as well, and he took his team. But Russ is right there. And so, you know, maybe this is his year. But, you know, if he takes the team to the Super Bowl, then, yeah, he'll be, you know, the top one or two, because he's got great numbers, completion percentage, all of that. I expect him to have a really good competitive year. And like Moyer was saying, I think that we've talked about this a little bit. I think, you know, no matter what the receivers, who the number three guy is, we think DK Metcalf is really going to improve. And I think their tight end situation is really good. There's a rookie free agent named Mabry that I just heard about, and we'll talk about them next Monday. We'll break down a couple of free agent tight ends that they really like him. And so, yeah, there's good competition there, and I feel like if they can really get, you know, with Schottenheimer and Russ working together for a third year, yeah, they'd be a top five defense or offense. But I think the defense is, you know, going to make a huge jump. And even if they do make a huge jump, that might still put them in the middle of the pack. But so what? I mean, that's an improvement.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at Kansas City last year. I mean, the year that they lost to the Patriots 2 years ago, they had one of the worst defenses in the league. And then they reached a point where they were at least passable or average, and they won the Super Bowl. So you look at situation here in Seattle, and you're thinking, okay, just get to average. You don't have to do the Legion of Boom stuff, the 2013 stuff where you're averaging, you know, giving up 18 points a game. You don't have to get that high. Just get to average at least. And if you get to average, I think Paul's right, though. You're going to have a top five offense to go with that average defense to make it to the Super Bowl. And as much as we like the sustained success that the Seahawks have had with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, I think you go into every year thinking that it's a disappointment if you don't at least get to the Super Bowl. The only thing is about having a top offense, it doesn't really it doesn't correlate with success necessarily, because I was looking at the top offensive teams last year. Dallas was number one, Tampa Bay number three, Atlanta number five, and the Rams number seven. And all four of those teams did not make the playoffs. But I do agree, though, that you're going to outscore some people with that defense. If that defense is anywhere what it was like last year, you're going to have to win some high-scoring games to account for that defense not being good enough to get you to the Super Bowl. Now, with the weapons they have, you think that they can probably do that offensively. You look at Lockett and Metcalf and the tight ends they have, adding Greg Olsen, Disley coming back. I really like Jacob Hollister, too. And then you added Carlos Hyde today. You got a 1-2 punch with Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, so you like that. But you wonder about the offensive line. Joe Thomas, Mark Schlereth talking about four new starters, how tough it's going to be for that line. So that's the one part where individually you look at the linemen that they brought in and you like to think that they're better than what you had. But collectively, I wonder about that because of the continuity they always talk about with the offensive line and not having time to practice together.
Jim, back to some of those offenses that didn't make the playoffs. I mean, the Bucs specifically, you had a quarterback throw 30 interceptions. Yeah, they piled up yards, but he threw 30 interceptions, and that doesn't include all of his fumbles. So it's easy to understand why they didn't make it, because their quarterback stinks. All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
The Mariners are expected to reopen their Peoria spring training complex for individual and small group workouts next week.
Good news. It's good news. We'll talk to Shannon Dreher coming up here in just a little bit, but it's a step in the right direction. It feels like there's momentum around baseball, around all sports at this point anyway, in terms of discussions and planning and things like that. So I love to see it.
I think it was about 2 months ago that we were supposed to be wrapping up our week in Peoria. And
feels like 2 years ago.
Bob and I had bunk beds picked out down there.
I got a cool Pablo Cruz t-shirt from Dave.
Yeah, it was going to be so much fun. So, yeah, just a little two-month delay there. But, yeah, I'm really excited to start watching baseball again.
Yeah, it's encouraging. Voluntary workouts and a lot of players still down in Arizona. So maybe we'll get the ball rolling in the right direction. And the players will stop whining and start playing, Bob.
Sad news today, as longtime Utah Jazz coach Jerry Sloan has died at the age of 78 due to complications from Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, sad story. I was not aware that he was afflicted with Parkinson's. I know he had some other condition going on as well, but man, as much as I hated the Jazz, and I maintain if you were a Sonics fan in the 90s, the Portland Trail Blazers were not your rival. It was the Utah Jazz. And maybe to a lesser extent, the Phoenix Suns. I hated the Jazz, but you had to respect how good they were, how consistent they were. And that all comes from Jerry Sloan, one of the greatest of all time in terms of coaching. He was a great player, played for the Bulls and coached the Bulls, I believe, for a year or two before he eventually landed in Utah. But a great hard-nosed player and a great hard-nosed coach. Really sad.
Boy, the NBA, and Jim, I'll let you talk. I know you liked him, and I just saw in that Last Dance he was really good in those post-game interviews. But 12 years, I think, as a player, and then had over 1,000 wins with Utah. I mean, this guy is a huge part of the NBA that they lost today.
Yeah, I was really saddened to hear that news today, and it went back to the 90s and all the games down there in Salt Lake City at the Delta Center, the Western Conference Finals when the Sonics ended up winning and going on to face the Bulls, and Jerry Sloan was always there, Karl Malone the mailman, John Stockton, and Jerry Sloan, and I just had nothing but respect for him. I love the way that he was just a no-nonsense guy. Not only with his team, but with the media. I enjoyed his press conferences. And, really, really tough news today. You're right. I mean, he was a heck of a player, too. He was just, hard-nosed, defensive guy. And, boy, you got everything that Jerry Sloan was going to give you every time he was playing or every time he was coaching.
All right, sad news there. Looking ahead, we're gonna get to Mean Text coming up at the end of the show again, so you can text in whatever you've got, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Just be creative with it. Take your shots. I've already seen some creative ones come through, so we've got some good material happening. You guys can continue to do that throughout the show. But as you heard, had a little bit of breaking news today that the Mariners will be reopening their spring training facility next week. We've got our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher, joining us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us to talk some football, but we've got some good news in the world of baseball. It looks like the Mariners are going to be returning, at least in part, to their spring training facility in Peoria. And joining us now is our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. Hello, Shannon.
Guys?
I heard you took a shot at us off the air. What is that all about?
It wasn't a shot at you. I was just very happy with what DJ did when he took you guys off the air and took over the show with Maura yesterday.
Okay. We always defend you when Jim comes after you. Dave and I will take it easy. We try to lighten the thunder that he brings, but I don't know. We might have to just unleash Jim on you now, I guess.
I'll give it.
What's the matter with you, Shannon?
Hey, by the way, did you catch what Felix had to say? He gave you a little shout out when he was on the show with us last week.
I did. That was a riot, and I got a funny text from him afterwards as well. So Yeah, it was good to hear Felix. It was good to hear him in such good spirits, and I'm just hoping that we get to see him on a mound in a few weeks.
Well, let's talk about what's going on. Okay. What can you tell us about the Mariners moving forward? Baseball seems to have momentum, and we should be seeing some people out there in Peoria next week.
Yeah, I've asked Jerry DePoto this question a few times over the last couple of weeks because there have been teams. Now, Major League Baseball gave the directive for all teams to shut down their spring training facilities, except in some exceptions where there had to be some sort of rehab work that was being done. But the Mariners facility was completely shut down. And you heard reports just kind of here and there of some guys getting into some different facilities. And at some point, I thought we would hear that maybe the Mariners were opening up theirs, especially as it started to accelerate over the last couple of days, where all of a sudden teams were officially opening them up. And this is just for small, basically conditioning workouts right now. And sure enough, the Mariners have been exploring plans to do that, and it looks like they are going to do it early next week. And it's just in an effort to give guys the opportunity to have a little bit more space to work out, to start to ramp up a little bit, to intensify their workouts, because so many of the guys in the organization really haven't had much of an opportunity to do too much baseball-wise in particular. And some have been challenged with their workout, what they've had available to them to work out, just as far as, you know, maintaining and conditioning. So it's a step forward. It has absolutely nothing to do with where negotiations are right now. But as is with any spring training, you don't just come in and go. You try and build up to it. And this will give the opportunity for more players to be able to do that.
Hey, Shannon, have you heard anything about how Jerry DePoto's comment yesterday about stop whining and just go play, how that's gone on or gone over for some of the players or any of the Mariners? Any more news on backlash from that?
I haven't heard anything else. And I think that when you listen to that in context, I think, you know, to me, it was an overall situation with everybody involved. And it was, you know, let's take a look at the outside world right now. Let's find a way to make this work. You know, let's just go play. So I haven't heard anything beyond what was said yesterday on the show. And I don't think that there was any malicious meaning behind that. And again, I think that, you know, everybody wants to see these guys out in the field, both sides for the most part. You know that the teams want to play. You know that most players want to play, and people want to see it as well. So it's distasteful. I think we've all talked about we don't want to see a big, long, prolonged battle. We don't want to see either side pop off. We just want guys to go out and play. So that takes, you know, it takes two to tango to get out there, and everybody needs to get on the same page and move forward and put a good face on this as best they can if they're going to play.
Well, I love what Jerry had to say there, Shannon. I got a kick out of it. You could just sense his frustration, and I'm certainly hoping that, like everybody else, that we'll see Major League Baseball here in July. And when we see it, Shannon, what do you think it's going to be like? I've seen the different things. I've written them down. Players might be arriving in uniforms, no restaurants on road trips, no lineup card exchanges, keep distance during the anthem, no socializing with opponents, on and on, no spitting. What do you think it's going to be like for everyone? It's going to take a while for everybody to get up to speed with all the differences.
Well, hopefully we see that, because the goal is to keep everybody as safe as possible. That's both in the ballpark and those that are working around them. And it's interesting because it is, you know, as inconvenient as some of these things sound, we know the players did not want to partake in the bubble plan. And to me, I think that would have been the best way to absolutely lock everything down and secure it. And in my mind, I thought it was doable. I thought that there would be a workforce there that would be happy to quarantine too, because people need jobs. And, you know, I think the toughest part obviously would be players being away from their families. But I wondered if that was something that could be worked in, as long as they were housed within the bubble too. It sounds like the NBA is looking at something similar to that right now. Of course, you're dealing with far less people. But if they didn't want to go that way, then how do you replicate that as best you can in the cities? And everybody's got to be on board. And it's not just the players, it's everybody at home as well. But the interesting thing to me was, as much as they don't want to do that, safety seems to be just such a huge concern and priority for them. And that's something that has escalated as we've gotten closer to the possibility of this actually happening. I mean, I've talked to some guys who I think are genuinely afraid of what's going on out there and how that could impact them. And and they don't want to get sick. And I've also talked to a lot of guys saying, you know, we're going to be fine. We'll take the precautions. We just want to go play ball. But I think that, you know, if you're asking guys not to do these things, then is it going to be an adjustment? Yes. But baseball players are extremely disciplined. And I think that once they get into that routine, it's something that they are going to be able to do. But we've still got a little ways to go before they even come to agreement on that. And I think the thing that jumped out at me the most and what the players gave back to MLB in that regard was they want more testing. They want to be tested every day. They want the assurances that they are, you know, taking every precaution. And if that's what they want, then they've got to realize it goes beyond just that one test when they walk into the ballpark. There's a lot that they're going to have to do and adjust to as well.
Shannon, it seems like the finances could be the sticking point from what we've read. You know, players want prorated salary. The league wants a 50-50 split of the revenues. We've heard comments from Blake Snell that did not play well at all. We've heard Tom Glavine weigh in, Mark Teixeira weigh in, and say basically the same thing, like, hey, guys, this is a unique situation. We're talking about just this year. You've got to kind of suck it up. To echo what Jerry said in a way, you know, you got to go out there and just understand the situation. It's not like anything you faced. And I think even if the players aren't the bad guys, so to speak, in this situation, that's how it's going to be perceived. If this thing does not happen because of finances, because somebody was supposed to make $7 million and now they're only getting $3 million, that's going to be hard for somebody collecting an unemployment check to really relate to.
I think so. And I think that's why it's important. And I think I mentioned a week ago, hey, you know, let's keep this out of the media. You guys need to negotiate this quietly, because every different report that comes out, regardless of what side it is, there's going to be bad feelings. You know, that puts a little bruise in MLB as a whole. I think that, you know, the players have drawn the line in that they are not going to do revenue sharing. That's fine. But if the agreement said that you would revisit what you do if the fans are not going to be a part of that and that revenue is not going to be there, then you need to revisit it. Are there other ways to achieve, you know, some sort of break for the owners without that? And in that case, is it deferring money? Or is it more of a, you know, another thing that the players have said is they are afraid that this is going to lead to a salary cap and that's something they're not going to allow. Well, can you have assurances that that's not going to happen? So, you know, to me, I think that there are other ways, and we haven't really seen much exploration of them as of yet, because that's all we've heard is revenue sharing, 50-50. This is what it's going to be. And my last point would be, if it has to be that, then I think the players need, you know, to see the books, or arbiters need to see the books. Somebody has got to see what the financial situation is if they're going to buy in. But, you know, let's just remember that they don't even have the proposal yet. So, you know, nobody goes in and signs the first thing that's put in front of them. This might be the most extreme thing and hopes that they can bargain to something else. We shall see. But, you know, I'm with you, Bob. You know, nobody wants to hear anybody arguing over money right now. But somehow, some way, it's got to get done.
Yeah. And we'll see. Hopefully they get it figured out. Shannon, we appreciate it. Hopefully we're talking about action on the field here really soon. So stay safe out there. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Reminder, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. We go back to 2008 when Felix Hernandez hits his grand slam. I believe he hit that off Johan Santana of the Mets. Brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 54. Well, Dave Wyman's been putting in the work this entire time, breaking down every single draft pick, every single undrafted free agent of your Seattle Seahawks, just educating you. So you go into this season with some knowledge. You understand who these guys are and where they came from. And that doesn't change today. Running back is the topic anyway. Carlos Hyde is in the fold. Is there somebody that could possibly earn a roster spot that we're not talking about? Dave is going to break down some running backs. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It is powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free, so you can just download it. Take us with you wherever you go. You got access to the show live. You can listen to the podcast. You can text. And by the way, speaking of text to our Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, we're not even an hour into the show. And I could argue this is the most creative mean text display we've seen so far. There have been some really good ones from you guys. So keep those coming. We'll unveil the mean text coming up at the end of the show. But as we've said, Dave Wyman's been providing an education for the 12s every single day, trying to give you a little insight, a little information, a little background on who the Seahawks have brought in here to make this team better. We went through every single one of the draft picks, and we've been going through undrafted free agents. And today he looks at a couple of running backs whose job just got a little tougher, Dave, because they added a veteran in Carlos Hyde to the running back room. So you looked at a couple guys. Do either have a shot of cracking this roster?
Well, I would say one of them does, but yeah, it's going to be tough, and I'm getting more negative as we go along. Next, like I mentioned, next Monday I'm going to talk about tight ends, which is going to be really difficult. But yeah, it just got a lot harder for these two guys. So Patrick Carr out of Houston, and the other guy is Anthony Jones out of Florida International. So Patrick Carr, let's start with him. Little guy, 5'8", 207 pounds. A couple fun facts here. He's 24 years old. And so I kind of asked around about this coming in as a rookie. Now, I was 23 because I was a fifth-year senior. I redshirted my senior year and then came back and played a fifth year. So I was 23 years old, so it's not that far off. But for a rookie, and he actually transferred, so he had to sit out the entire 2016 draft. But just from poking around, I guess there's a lot of people that hold their kids back in Texas. And, you know, Texas is a crazy, ridiculous high school football state. I mean, it's like a religion down there. And there's, you know, these programs. And I remember Moyer talking about when Bellevue went down there and played Katy, Texas, his son's senior year, Nick's senior year. They, you know, there was like a zero period where it was for the football players where they could train and they would do chalk talk and stuff. So it was like a class. And so, you know, and you look at the stadiums down there, they'll fill these stadiums up with, you know, 25, 30,000 people watching a high school football game. So it's like a religion down there. So some of the parents will hold their kids back. So, you know, that they get, you know, like an extra year. So it's a little crazy, a little bit nutty, but that's kind of something that is known for. Another fun fact for you, Jim. Patrick Carr had 9 carries for 77 yards and an 8.6 average versus the Washington State Cougars.
You're not going to believe this.
Carr Bowl kickoff or whatever.
First game of the season. You're not going to believe this, but I actually wrote that down, Dave. I did a little research to follow along with what you were doing. You know that he averaged 5.7 yards per carry for Houston, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, in 2018 and 19. Yeah, he is. And there's a couple of things about this guy. Go ahead.
No. I'm just saying if he can run for 77 yards against that Cougar defense, he should be do pretty well in the NFL, too.
Okay, that was not necessary.
Too bad we don't have a rim shot sound effect here.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. No. So, no. 2018. Yeah, so he played – all right, shut up, Jim. Okay, so 2017, he sat out 16. He was a true freshman with Colorado. Yeah, 10 games he played with Colorado as a true freshman. So he had 66 carries, 272 yards, one touchdown, 5 catches. And then he sat out 2016 and came back, not a good 17 season. But in 18, he had 13 games, 152 carries, 868 yards, and a 5.7 yard average and 5 touchdowns. So, like I said, he's a little guy. And then his senior year, he missed the last 6 games. He only played in 6 games, 67 carries, once again, a 5.7 yard average. And why do you think he missed the last 5 or 6 games?
Injury?
I mentioned earlier that somebody got shot in the face, but this was not him. Actually, he tore his meniscus. Oh. Tore his meniscus in the Navy game.
Nice pump fake there.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, guy only had 15 catches his whole career, so it's not like they threw him the ball a lot. But here's a couple of things about him. Number one, he's got sewing machine feet. And just like a drum roll. I mean, his feet are always going. They're always moving, and he runs out of and spins out of a lot of tackles. I think he's a little kind of like that Boston Scott kid with the Eagles that we saw a couple of times last year. That kid's only 5'6", and sometimes those smaller guys are harder to tackle, so, and especially when they have good feet. So that's the really thing that that stood out, and I really like this kid. But the other thing I like, too, is remember how Tiki Barber used to carry the ball? He would have it up on his shoulder pads, you know, and yep. That's what they say, you know, if you don't want to fumble. And from what I saw, he did not have a fumble at Houston. So, and that's with quite a few carries, like over 225 carries. So really trying to do radio math here. Yeah, it's pretty close. So anyway, he really is. That's like, you know, I talked the other day about that Mensah kid, that his prime intent is the strip sack. You know, when he gets in there, like that's the first thing. He's not going for the sack. He's trying to get the ball out. This kid, he plays the way he carries the ball. It's like his primary goal is don't fumble. And I didn't see any fumbles. He might have fumbled his freshman year at Colorado, but the last two I couldn't see any. So, yeah, he's a really interesting kid. The other kid, Anthony Jones from Florida International, 5'10", 210 pounds, a little bit more of like a slasher. And he started off listed as a wide receiver, but you know, he had just a normal amount of catches, 38 catches for 271 yards and four touchdowns in his career there. But he carried the ball 418 times for 2,010 yards, and it had about a 4.8 yard average and 21 touchdowns. So he scored 25 touchdowns his entire time at FIU. And he was honorable mention All-Conference USA. But I'm reading through his bio. First of all, Dalvin Cook appears to be his brother. And the other thing about him, I'm reading his bio, and it's like, yeah, he played for week one and then got shot in the face and then missed like five games and then came back and played the last five games. So, I mean, the guy was, you know, I think he was in a bad neighborhood or something, him and another player, and he's got like a scar that snakes down the right side of his neck. And but he, you know, after he heals up from that, he comes back and plays five games after getting shot. So, you know, and then at first, you know, he was talking about why me, you know, I never do anything wrong and my mom raised me right and everything. But then he just kind of took it on as being something to motivate him. So, you know, we talk about adversity, and it's pretty pretty prevalent that it's not like they're looking for it, but they certainly don't mind it. When a kid has grit, has gone through something like that, it gives you kind of a new lease on life. And, you know, the article that was, you know, talking about the whole thing, I think it was in the Sun Sentinel or one of the papers down there, you know, it was like, if that bullet had gone, you know, a fraction of an inch one way or the other, he might not be with us. So he kind of got a new lease on life. But I thought it was pretty impressive that he came back in 2018 and played the rest of the five games that were on the schedule for Florida International.
Wow. That's amazing. Good stuff, Dave. Good stuff. We'll continue that, taking a look at everybody being brought into this organization. And there is a new name. Carlos Hyde agrees to a one-year deal with the Seahawks. I was really excited when we were talking about this, and now I just saw some terms of the deal. Not quite as excited. We'll talk to the professor, John Clayton, about that and everything else coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.